With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Well, here we are at episode 52 of our weekly Pocalypse podcast, suggesting we've made it to our first year anniversary. We hope you enjoyed listening to it as much as we've enjoyed making it. In the past 12 months, we've learnt so much and have had some amazing guests, so make sure you check out all the previous episodes. But that was yesterday, so let's get on with today. My name is Stuart Miles, and welcome to the Pocalypse podcast. This week, we've got all the details from the Sonos launch, including the new Sonos Arc soundbar, the Sonos Sub, Sonos 5 speaker, and next-generation Sonos S2 software. I talked to the inventor of a new desk lamp that promises to help dyslexic sufferers read normally for the first time, and Mike, Pocalypse Reviews editor, joins us to give us his verdict on the new Huawei MateBook X Pro laptop. Does it benefit from the new 10th generation Intel processor? Well, stay tuned to find out. But first, Rick Henderson joins me to tell us more about Sonos. So, Rick, what's the skinny?
Well, Sonos pretty much replaced a lot of devices in its lineup. The headline one was the Sonos Arc soundbar, which completely replaces the Playbar, which is about 7 years old. I'm a big fan of the Playbar, so basically, I was looking forward to any kind of replacement, especially seeing as this new one now comes with Dolby Atmos. That's its big new feature. It also adds Alexa and Google Assistant support, HDMI eARC, which is a higher bandwidth version of HDMI to connect to your TV, which adds other bells and whistles. And essentially, it looks slightly nicer than the Playbar, which was kind of a big beast of a soundbar.
So is this a more impressive version of the Beam soundbar?
It's actually even... It has very similar features to the Beam, but a hell of a lot more drivers inside. It looks nicer than the Beam, I think. Beam is really designed to still sit on a TV stand, whereas the Arc looks like it's really designed to sit lovely on a wall, in a wall mount. And in fact, it has an intelligent sensor inside that knows exactly when it is out on the wall mount rather than on a stand, that it instantly changes the EQ and changes sort of like the sound signature that comes out of it. It's really lovely, the idea. Obviously, we haven't had it in for testing yet, so we'll defer any thought on what it actually sounds like. But the actual concept on paper sounds like Sonos has finally caught up.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, Sonos hardware has always been fantastic. You know, it's certainly a well-rounded sound. Giles Martin, who tunes it, the Giles Martin, i.e. son of George Martin, producer of all the Beatles tracks that we listen to throughout life, you know, he's got a very good ear, and I've met him on a number of occasions. So, you know, he's a great guy as well in terms of understanding music and appreciating it. How's the software? What's happening on that front?
Right. Well, the software is coming out. There's a new system software coming out on June the 8th. And there's certain aspects to that legacy Sonos kit owners will be quite interested in the fact that it won't work on their legacy kit, but they can still use the existing Sonos software, just not with the new features. But the new Sonos software has essentially been driven by the need to supply the Arc with Dolby Atmos, because the previous software just couldn't handle Dolby Atmos, basically, nor it needed to be completely rewritten from the ground up to be able to cope with higher resolution audio, different room groups, grouping different rooms, etc. It's a better software. Will look very similar to the existing software, but it's coming to all devices apart from like a handful of really old 13-year-old devices.
Now, no Play 3 update, however. So the 5 obviously replaces the Play 5, which replaced the original Play 5. The 3 is the sort of the elephant in the room, it feels.
Yeah, the 3 just hasn't been replaced at all, although I would expect it to be at some point. Or they might just decide that there's not really a need for it and probably doesn't sell very well. The 5 is certainly the new version of the 5, which has a slight tweak on the design, but is mainly replacing because it has better memory processing and a couple of other things, like the Wi-Fi signature is slightly improved. But that's the speaker they're really pushing, that and the Sonos One. I think the 3 is no longer really an important speaker in its lineup. It really doesn't do an awful lot. If you want to buy a stereo pair, for example, you probably want to buy 2 5s, because they work like a proper audiophile style stereo pair. If you want to add surrounds to your home cinema system, you'd add Sonos Ones. So where does the 3 set sort of like fit in that? It doesn't really. So I suppose that's kind of their thought. They've also updated the sub, but you wouldn't notice it really. That's really purely an update that adds extra memory and extra processing. And it kind of is there for future use more than actually now. If you've got a sub second generation, then you're absolutely fine.
So I was going to say, if you have the sub, can you just add that and still use the new S2 software?
Yeah, absolutely. The sub will instantly link with your new Sonos Arc even. The Gen 2 sub, even the Gen 1 sub is absolutely fine. I didn't even know there was a Gen 1 and Gen 2 sub, let alone a Gen 3 sub. So, all of them work capably well. It's just that they keep adding little tiny processor upgrade so that in future, in 10 years time, some of the kit will work with the latest software when it comes to it.
Brilliant. And when's all this out?
The software comes out on 8th of June. All the speakers come out on the 10th of June. They're all available for pre-order now.
Still to come, Mike gives us his verdict on the new Huawei MateBook X Pro laptop.
Generally speaking, I think the 10th gen is better than the predecessor in terms of how long you can get, say, watching videos for. It will last a pretty decent innings.
If you're dyslexic or know someone that is, you'll know that reading isn't the easiest of things. B's become D's all too easily, and that can make reading at times almost impossible. There are workarounds, of course. Colour see-through paper that helps some, tricks that help others, but for the most part, it's a case of just getting on with it. In an attempt to solve this problem, Frenchman Jean-Baptiste Fontes created the Lexilite lamp. But how does it work? Is it a technology that's easy to use? And will it make reading for dyslexic people any easier? I put all these questions and more to Fontes and started by asking him how he came up with the idea in the first place.
Yes, so basically 2 years ago in France, two French scientists did a discovery. They proved that dyslexic people have actually 2 dominant eyes instead of 1. What does that mean? It means that the dyslexic people receive 2 images at the same time for the brain, the image and the mirror image, and that creates what dyslexia can be. And I don't know if you know dyslexic people, but for symmetrical letters such as B, D, they are perceived the same way for the brain, and that's why it's very hard for dyslexic people to understand and to see, like, is it a B or is it a D? And so after the discovery, my little brother is dyslexic, and I had a chance to go and meet the 2 scientists, and the idea was to try to find a solution for this trouble. And by actually pulsating and modulating the light in a certain way, you can actually change the way the brain perceives things and actually erase the mirror image and see the text clear again. And so that's how it began. We did the first prototypes, and then finally did a year and a half testing on a panel of 300 people dyslexic to prove that the technology worked. And now, starting January this year, we launched to the public.
And so how does it differ from I know dyslexic people as well, and they sometimes they use the sort of coloured cards, or, you know, there's different techniques that are obviously out there. Yeah. Just people have to try and learn to deal with the B&D situation.
Yeah.
How does this differ? Is it because you're tricking the brain to believe you're seeing something else with the use of light?
Yes, exactly. So there are a lot of tools already in the market, and a lot of tools that help the idea of dyslexic people, you know, to trick the brain and make them able to analyze better what they are trying to read. The chance we have with the lamp is that it really goes into the science, I would say, and can trick the brain directly through the modulation of the light waves. And so the idea is, as dyslexic people are receiving two images at the same time, the idea is to create one dominant eye, and basically the lamp is pulsating in a certain way where one of the eyes is not dominant anymore. And so basically cutting the light at a certain point can make the brain choose one image and not the other. And that's how we are tricking the brain. Every dyslexic are different, and so the lamp we have settings, and the idea is to find the right setting. So it's not a unique lamp, I would say. You have to after customize it and make sure you can find the clear spot where you know, it's as in binoculars, I would say. Is the idea to try to find the right setting to see the text clear again.
And so if you're in a room with someone that's using this light, is it, you talked about pulsating, you know, the light pulsates and stuff. Can you detect that for other people? Is it off-putting for non-dyslexic people?
It's really a micro sensitive pulsation. So you are not seeing anything if you are close to someone using the lamp. It's not troubling anymore at all. It's very it's seen as a regular lamp. How you can see it's pulsating, it's when you film the lamp, or when you can see that there is something going on with the light. But if you're just close to someone, there is no problem. And actually, people already use it. So we have a lot of children using the lamp at school. And so we have the teachers accepted for them to bring the lamp and to work with it. And so and that does not at all trouble the other pupils.
And the obviously with technology, you know, we all read books, that's fine, mm-hmm. but we also spend a lot of time in front of computers or tablets or mobile phones. How does it work? Does it work on screens as well, or do you have to do something different?
Yes, so we wanted to start where we would have the most impact, and so it was the reading and the reading at schools. That's why we started with the lamp. Because the idea was really to help the children who are disgusted by reading, be confident again in reading. And so we wanted to start with a desk lamp for this. However, the lamp can be used also for tablets, for phone. If you put them under the light, it works as well as a regular text. And you can also turn the head of the lamp up, so you can also light directly a screen, a computer screen. We know it's not the best way yet, but if you need to, you can always, with the current lamp, light the screen and help what you are reading through the light. And so, of course, after the real thing that you have to do is really what you need to read should be under the light and should not be troubled by external light. That's why, for example, the sunlight is very troubling. So we say to people that it's better for them to read in, you know, a more shadowed space where are the main lamp is the Lexi light.
And do you foresee a future where the technology is built into the screen that we use? Is that possible, or is it something that is only available in the lamp?
Yeah, definitely. We have a R&D team working on now thinking of where we can adapt the technology, and we have a lot of opportunities there.
And with that, could the technology be used elsewhere? As I say, is obviously a lamp, but could you use it for other applications?
You mean other than dyslexia?
Well, I fold that into two questions then. Other than dyslexia, does this have any benefits, you know, for people that perhaps don't have dyslexia or don't even realize they have dyslexia? Or could you turn the technology, as you say, put it into screens and put it to other applications?
Yes. So other than dyslexia, it's really focused on dyslexia. And right now, we want to keep the technology for dyslexic people. It's really based on this discovery. So we are really focusing only on dyslexia yet. But we know, and when I say dyslexia, it's really for the reading. For dyscalculia, this orthographic, we are now, seeing if there is an impact or not. We are too young yet to have as many data as possible to say, yes, it also helps dyscalculia and this orthographic people. However, we are still working on this. And yes, after for the second question, we are thinking of integrating the technology in other tools and screens can be, we are working on that to make sure, first the technology can adapt well, and after how we are launching it, it's also right now under the questions, but we know that schools already use a lot of tablets for the children, and sometimes also laptops. So the idea is to think how we can adapt that for the dyslexic, so we can add this tool to them, so after they can continue learning as they used to do, but with dyslexic people included.
And it's available now, or is it out soon? Because I know you showcased it at CES at the beginning of the year.
Yes, exactly. We launched officially at the CES. It was under pre-orders at the CES. We have already delivered the first batch, so everybody who ordered after the CES. And now we are building the next production, so we'll be stocked. And normally, because of the COVID, it was a bit delayed because the factory is closed and everything is made in France. Everything starting June should be, everybody would be able to be delivered in 5 days.
It's been a bit of a rough ride for Huawei in the European market, since its phones, such as the Mate 30 Pro and P40 Pro, have been unable to release with Google services. However, that has had no direct impact on its Windows laptop business, with the third generation MateBook X Pro arriving with updated 10th gen Intel Core i Eternals. To look at the MacBook X Pro certainly has some Apple-like cues, no surprise given its name, design and clear targeting of the MacBook Pro, but in many cases it goes one better than Apple's current Pro offering thanks to a minimal bezel, touchscreen control and Nvidia discrete graphics. So does all that add up to a great Windows laptop? Mike Lowe, Pocalimp Review Editor, joins me to discuss more now. So Mike, what's it like?
It's pretty good, actually, and I think given what you've just alluded to in the kind of struggles that the company is having, this is a laptop that I think a lot of people perhaps don't even know exists. It's kind of very quietly launched, and this is the third generation one. In the same way that Apple kind of launches, it hasn't changed its design. When it came out, I think the first was 2018, and even then it kind of showed that the kind of design standards that this company was managing to put out were really, you know, quite ahead of the time, really, in terms of just having a screen that didn't really have big black bezel around the edges. And that's a design that's kind of stuck. But like I say, I think getting hold of it and actually being able to find one is kind of probably the biggest struggle with this laptop, really, because it offers a lot of really decent performance and design points, to be honest.
And it seems that in the Windows space, there's a lot of people shouting quite loudly about, you know, Dell XPS, for example. You've got, you know, the Microsoft Surface range and things like that. And how does this kind of fit in with those products?
It's very much a Windows machine. So there's no need to discuss Android, which is where Huawei's having its issues. it's kind of, I think big companies such as Microsoft with the Surface have very much established kind of its own solution. Like Surface is kind of technically a tablet, you know, it's a bit like the Windows iPad Pro sort of competitor. And they've really carved out ownership of that area. Dell has done extremely well in kind of innovating design as well. And they kind of, through enterprise and being an American company, they've really done extremely well across the Windows space. So I think Huawei's tactic when it first came out with this really was to say, hey, you know, Apple's doing very well with the MacBook Pro. What's a kind of Windows alternative that we can deliver with some arguably better features for a decent price point? And that's really, I think, its intended appeal.
So is there anything you don't like about it? I've heard that the 10th generation Intel processors do go a bit guzzle happy on the battery. Is that the case here?
It kind of depends what you do with it. So if you're really pushing it, then yeah, you can see the battery kind of fold. If you don't, I've actually been quite impressed with how it balances out the power. So generally speaking, I think the 10th gen is better than, you know, the predecessor in terms of how long you can get, say, watching videos for. It will last a pretty decent innings. Terms of things to not like about it, it's got some oddities. The screen's a bit glossy, and this is kind of a thing that happens on a lot of laptops. But if you're outside or you're in a place, you know, a coffee shop, whatever, where there's a lot of light, that reflection can be a little bit irritating. And one of its kind of standout but peculiar features is because the bezels are so small, it doesn't have a camera within those bezels. It can't fit one in. So Put it under the F7 key. So rather than it being an actual key that you can press, you touch it and the little camera kind of pops out. That angle, whether or not you have a good chin line or not, really isn't the most flattering. So it's kind of an ingenious placement, but also a kind of completely baffling one.
That's similar to the Dell XPS range. I think they have the because of the bezel issue, they have the camera in the bottom where the logo normally sits. And one of the guys on the team, Apocalypse, has one, and I won't say who because it's a bit unfair on him, but yeah, he doesn't have a chin for a low facing camera. Bless him. And all you see is his big hands just tapping away as he's doing video calls.
It's not even just Dell. I mean, even I think Lenovo also does similar, where they have like a large bezel at the bottom, so it gives a similar kind of look. The way around that with those kind of devices is often they come with full flip around hinges, so you can flip it into a tent position to get the camera kind of up the top once you make a call. Although sometimes you'll be kind of hanging from the ceiling in that call unless you make relevant adjustments in your Zoom camera or whatever it is, whatever application you're using for that call.
Brilliant. And so on all those things, whether the good and the bad, would you say this is a thumbs up for the MacBook X Pro?
It's a decent laptop. It's a little bit hard to find, I think, is one of its kind of difficulties, particularly as it was kind of removed from Microsoft Store from the last generation. So getting hold of one is probably the most troublesome thing you're going to have about it. Screen being reflective is a bit of a pain, but really it's kind of a surprise that this company is making this stuff and perhaps it's not doing as well as it could do, because genuinely it's a really decent performing laptop that shouldn't be overlooked.
That's it for this week's show. Thanks for listening. Until next time, pip pip.